Hello, welcome to the Shot in the Dark podcast. Soon the new year.
Absolutely.
Next week. What's the plans for New Year's Eve, guys? Are you up to anything good?
I'm off over to my mum's.
We're going to Devon. Yes. Got like 12 of us in a little cottage.
Lovely.
I know. Very cute.
Fondue?
I hope so, yeah.
Cheese or chocolate?
Red wine. We always have red wine fondue. We pour a bottle of red wine in
and
let it boil. Just let it boil and then we cook the meats in the red wine fondue.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And have a chocolate.
And then fondue is just a process. Fondue is just
a style of cooking. Style. Yeah.
Like barbecue.
Yeah.
Exactly like barbecue.
Yeah. No different, actually.
No, it's just in terms of it's a style.
Yeah.
Choose what you use.
Like pate.
Like pate, you're going to need to explain that to me.
Well, it's just like the way they do it. So it can be pate, can be anything, can't it? You can have like pateed mushrooms or like salmon mackerel pate and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's the way they
do
like
it. Or like steaming then.
Yeah.
Steam anything, can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cooking. Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah.
Right. Today's topic is our first product review. We've been kind enough to have people write to us and ask us to review several different products that are currently very popular within the world of fitness and training. Yeah. So we have a few other products coming up, but today we are reviewing the Compex system, or the
electrical muscle stimulators in general.
We've played with them a little bit. We've given them a couple to our athletes. We've had a little bit of time to research them and look at it. I know Jim has done a lot of work on it. So we're going to have a little talk about them, what they are and what they do. And then we're going to talk about their application and the process of using them. And then, of course, we'll finish up at the end with if it's something we're going to carry on using with our athletes or not, and what conclusions we've come to.
Correct. So I'm going to kick off with what the Compex does, or the different settings and different ways of being able to use it. So the first main use that people use it for most of the time is for muscle recovery after exercise. Other uses also include being able to increase the amount of muscular strength by recruiting more motor units, and also pain relief. They're three of the main functions of it.
And I'm going to talk about how it is that it works, what it is that it works. So the idea of electrical muscle stimulation has been around for a while, since, I don't know, like the 70s sometime. And the idea is that it replicates impulses from the brain, this is the idea, and allows the muscles to recruit and contract. So it provides stimulation to the muscles, and then the muscles contract, and voila, you've got increased strength, apparently.
Is that documented?
Yeah, there's huge amounts of documentation. I mean, they use it quite a lot in patients with critical illnesses, patients that are bedridden, etc. And there's quite a lot of research that goes back, and even more recent research in 2011, 2015. There's lots that sort of go through and talk through when we sort of come up with it.
So the concept is that we put an artificial stimulant. I think that's probably where the discussion needs to start, isn't it? You're putting an artificial stimulant, so pretty much you're doing the nervous system's job for yourself. Is that right? So the nervous system, so I understand it. Of course, we've got the brain and we've got messages, and backwards and forwards we've got input, output. And this is a form of input. An electrical stimulus, as in, and we know neurological pathway, or how the messages travel between the body, is the same as electricity. It's an electrical current that goes from the brain or to the brain to the muscle, which
creates contraction.
Creates contraction, etc. And so this is called the same thing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I mean the way most of the people that I've come across use it is predominantly in that recovery setting. So yeah, they put it on the muscle. The muscle starts to twitch, contract, because it's contracting, which is then aiding the recovery. One of the statements on the website is it increases blood circulation by 300%.
And off, based off of that, where's that? The reference for that is where.
That's just with on the website.
Okay. So they actually on their website they've got a couple of clinical studies, and they've suggested that these prove the effectiveness of the EMS, so the electrical muscle stimulation. So they talk a bit about high frequency neuromuscular electrical stimulation is suitable tool for performance athletes. So there's a paper back in 2011 and a French study which talks about the difference between two cohorts. So they have two training athletes or two groups of athletes, and they use EMS with one of them and not with another to try and improve their jump performances and their sprinting ability. They conclude at the end that there is compelling evidence that the EMS is relevant and effective in the use to try and improve jump performance or sprint ability after they've used it. There are a few drawbacks to such study. First of all, they haven't talked much about the sample size, how many people they've used, who they've compared it to, what they've compared it to, and how long those sort of improvements last, which are all things that would be relevant for an athlete. I mean, yeah, it's all well and good that immediately it might change or might affect it, but comparing it to what? I mean, if it's just you sat there doing that compared to somebody not doing anything, then certainly it's going to improve.
Yeah, that's what I took from the study as well, was what was the other group doing, because they didn't really stipulate that they were both going through a jump program, but were they doing jump training, were they not doing jump training? So one was jump training with the Compex, one was jump training without it, or was it a case of one using a stimulator, something, the other's not doing anything?
Yeah.
Has your jump improved?
Yeah, of course it has.
So that the study doesn't really talk much about that.
Right. And it was published, it was accredited.
And that's, I think, the difference, isn't it? And then they're trying to find out a little bit more about how relevant that is, because they've got a few other studies on there as well, talking about the same sort of thing with gymnasts and vertical body height, vertical jump height, sorry. So they, at this point, they've said they've got 16 young gymnasts divided into two groups. So 16 is a really small sample size. You can't, and again, gymnasts is going to even sort of narrow that cohort even further down. So they separated that into two groups. One had the EMS as well as their normal gymnastics training, and the other had just the gymnastics training. And at 3 weeks after using the EMS, there was an increase in the muscle strength of the knee extensors as well as the jumping performance, whereas the controlled group was the same and didn't change anything. And the improvements last for a month, so one more week. But they haven't alluded to whether or not that lasts any further. And again, they haven't talked about how much they've used it, and they haven't talked much about what the other group were doing. So again, I'm not entirely convinced that we can use that as a
credible,
brilliant, sort of way, yeah, exactly. I mean, it wouldn't be the gold standard. It's not a randomised control trial, or in the world, that by that I mean they haven't put different groups into and different people and age ranges, etc., which would make it more sort of
credible.
Yeah, exactly, but more appropriate or more sort of applicable to everything else.
I mean, isn't there some form of, from your training perspective, Jazzy, isn't there some form of sort of contradiction here in having a stimulus? I mean, we're trying to teach motor patterns. We're trying to teach movement and structure of movement. Yeah. So we're trying to learn a skill, and sport, in essence, is learning a new skill or bettering a skill that you can already do. How is that? I mean, we're talking, because a lot of the quotes that the gym is coming with there, she's talking a lot about performance enhancement rather than recovery. And I know there's a recovery setting in it, but if we just stay on the performance enhancement, how in your world is the replicability of using this for stimulus on a muscle? It sounds difficult to me.
For the sporting performance side, that strength gain and application of muscle recruitment during motion, for me it doesn't really have the specificity that I'd want from the products. Like watching the use of it and having the guys experience it, like that contraction is happening, that the stimulation that it creates, you see that muscle twitching and all that contraction is happening, that's creating that muscle, the extension of the quadriceps, for example, whilst you are trying to do a squat. So it's getting the guys going down into the eccentric phase of the squat, lowering down where the quads would actually be lengthening, not shortening. So creating a muscle stimulation to have a muscle trying to shorten when it's actually functionally in the movement trying to lengthen is going against the specificity of the movement and what I want that muscle to learn. Obviously we're talking about muscles here in isolation, but the nervous system is what they are manipulating with the machine. But the important facts of the nervous system are that we've got both the afferent signals for the brain, as the afferent nervous system signals, so that's the input coming towards the brain from the body, versus the efferent output signals creating contractions. So whilst we are moving, the nervous system in the localized level within the muscles, so the Golgi tendon organs and the muscle spindles that are detecting the speed of muscle contraction, the amount of force and the amount of tension that muscles are coming under, like they're effectively being overridden, and they're not getting to experience, oh well, actually I am now reaching my end range of motion. Now it is my time to contract.
Yeah.
The muscle's basically been told, keep contracting, keep contracting, keep contracting. Yeah. And that's the biggest issue for me.
It feels like a little bit, you know, you're walking up to a T-junction with two people and one says turn left and one says turn right, and you're trying to turn left and right at the same time, aren't you? You can't go in both directions.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's where it appears that way from a performance perspective. I mean, the first time I heard... We had it in the cycling world where we had guys putting the Compex on whilst they were cycling. So while a muscle's trying to be functionally longer, the Compex is trying to give them the message that we need to be shorter. Now, there's a documentation that we've read and we've talked about. It says that they've proven that it has and it contracts and it does, the signal gets to the muscle. So if the signal gets to the muscle and the fibres are contracting and the motor units are contracting, then there is a signal reaching the muscle. Now, the muscle doesn't know the difference. The muscle isn't clever enough to know the difference, as we talk about in our muscle podcasts. The muscle doesn't know the difference. So here's the problem. Which one should it trust? And ethically, can we be sure that the body isn't going to learn to trust the external stimulant more than the internal stimulant? Because you have the brain saying left and you have the Compex saying right. Which one should I trust? Which one should I believe? Which one should I do? And you usually, like in most things in life, the muscle will usually see what's strongest. You know, we usually go towards the stronger signal. And that would be very difficult to know which one is the stronger signal, because, of course, squatting with weight on would give a reasonably strong signal. But it's the same as the Compex. You can turn up and down and have the different strengths. So my concern or my worry would be we're giving two messages, one saying left, one saying right, and conflicting messages. And is the body then is the body then learning to take its orders from an external source? And even sort of more worryingly, is it then relying on that external source? So then when the external source isn't there, is the body then searching for it? Is it looking for it? That would be very difficult to prove. I don't know if you've got, Jim, have you had anything there?
I haven't found anything that would sort of prove or sort of disprove that. I think there's, with regards to sort of the studies and the things that they've backed it up with, it's very limited to when they use it. So they haven't, I haven't found anything to say when they use it in movement. No. So like while they're squatting or while they're cycling. A lot of the time the research still comes back to, oh, it's post-recovery, they'll use it with comparison to doing nothing. Again, like I said before, the comparisons are very different. But there's nothing to suggest, there's no studies to suggest that it improves the muscle recovery or muscle soreness or sustained strength or strength within a movement, like you said, because as you said, it's completely changing how your muscles would normally work or would normally function.
Yeah.
I think the thing with like the recovery there is how do you measure muscle soreness in a sense of, oh, this helped with my muscle soreness. Like most people are doing in a training week different things on different days, different tasks. The first time you give them that skill, they're going to be really, really sore. Second time you give them that skill, they're going to be less sore. So how do we measure whether they're improving? When you're in a state of really high fitness levels, you don't get half as much soreness as you do when you're in your lower fitness levels and you're just starting out with your training.
Yeah,
so that measurement of like DOMS and muscle fatigue is just a great, like, take the complex out of the situation. It's a grey.
Yeah, it's a grey area.
Anyway. One of the studies that it looked at recovery, but it compared cold water immersion with the EMS, so ice baths and things like that, which I know we're not necessarily talking about, but just as a comparison. And one of the things that they measured was anti-inflammatories within the blood. So they looked at things like your CRP levels. And so I suppose that's one way that they could potentially measure it, but whether that's applicable to everybody is, again, a bit grey, I would say. Mm. Either way, it came back that the cold water was slightly better than the EMS, but
okay.
They didn't compare it to anything else. So.
So from a recovery standpoint, then, what is the process that it's trying to do? Why are we recovering better using Compex than sitting and doing nothing?
Because it's creating the local muscular contraction, so then there's blood flow moving through that muscle.
So it's flushing. Flushing through the system. But cold water seems to be...
Apparently. According to that, and I might get the name wrong, Chatner in 2015 compared the two.
Okay.
And there was no improvement with the EMS compared to the cold water immersion therapy.
Okay.
But obviously that's a whole new topic to talk about, but I mean, just as a comparison really.
Yeah.
But then it claims to improve the blood flow, and I can understand the theory behind that, but there isn't any evidence to suggest that it does improve blood flow. I understand that it will...
It increases the muscle.
It doesn't improve the flow of blood around the body, because as, I'm not sure if we've mentioned or not, but that isn't changing your heart rate. That isn't getting the heart pumping faster or more quickly to improve the circulation.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And I think it's not for now, but it's worth mentioning now. I think there's a lot of confusion there where people say, oh, you know, because blood is flowing at a greater rate around my body now, it's good for blood flow.
Mm.
We're talking about the structural integrity of the cardiovascular system.
Yeah.
And something that improves the structural integrity, as in the capillary walls or the density of the walls, how nutrients are absorbed, and that's improving a cardiovascular system. Because when I jump up and down, my heart rate goes up. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm improving my cardiovascular system. And that's an important distinction. I don't know if they make that distinction in the recovery. Are they quoting research for recovery as well? And I don't know if that's mentioned. Are we improving the integrity of the cardiovascular system, or are we just increasing blood flow?
I think that the claim is that they're increasing blood flow as opposed to...
One of the studies that I'd read, it was a comparison of recovery systems in a baseball pitcher.
Right.
Oh, is this the... Yeah.
Yeah, and the in between baseball pitches, they had different methods of recovery. So it was 6 minutes of jogging. It was literally nothing, just sit there. Or it was 6 minutes of the EMS. And they proved, or the study says, that the lactate levels within the... after the 6 minutes of EMS was the... after the EMS was the lowest level of blood lactate within...
But, I mean, not to be nitpicky, but that would be the case, wouldn't it? Because sitting down, you're doing nothing, so lactate would accumulate. Running, well, you're running, it would accumulate, and you're increasing, as we've just proven there, when you put an electrical stimulus to a muscle, you increase, without activity, you increase blood flow to an area, so therefore you'd have the flushing effect. So that makes sense, but it's not necessarily relevant. Yeah. To what we're talking about, because it's comparing sort of chickens and eggs, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose the thing with scientific studies, they prove the statistics and numbers and
that they're looking for
to show that it's
they're trying to prove themselves either right or well mainly right but yeah. sometimes wrong.
Sometimes wrong. Yeah,
I mean, and to say that these old studies are completely unbiased would obviously not necessarily be true. I mean, even in their website, they've said that some of the studies carried out are in partnership with Compex. So, as with lots of studies, I mean, Forever Jug Pumpkin is a funding the studies that they want to be out, but certainly that means that they're going to be a little bit more biased, aren't they? They are going to pick things like, well, we'll put the EMS on the area that we are looking at, and we'll compare something else that is perhaps not related. So, had they compared it to, I don't know, some exercises in their arms or some active movements within their arms, it might have been a different story compared to them sort of running or jogging.
Yeah.
The other thing is the pain. So, pain interference.
Yeah.
So, that's the other area that we've not yet kind of touched on.
Yeah.
So it helps with pain reduction by interfering with the perception of pain.
Yeah, the pain gate theory has been around for ages and tends to transcutaneous electrical stimulation. They've used in pain for years and years and years. And the idea is that if you can bombard the brain, in simple terms, if you can bombard the brain with a different stimulus, then your body won't perceive pain because your body can only perceive a certain number of stimulus from these certain number of fibres, so from your delta fibres and your myelinated C fibres. You can only perceive a certain number. So, like, for example, when you bang your elbow and then you bang your knee, you can only feel one, not the other. So the idea of the TENS machine is that you bombard the central nervous system, or that you bombard the nervous system, you can't feel or you can't perceive that level of pain. So it is going to have an effect on your perception of pain at that point. The carryover after is not.
It doesn't
so
take
good.
The pain away
yeah.
or the problem away,
no.
does it? No, 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 no.
Yeah.
But in that respect, if that worked for that period of time, then it's not
great.
Then,
yeah,
yeah then
exactly.
Great, yeah, give
yeah.
the person a little bit of relief. That would be nice.
What about using it in your? Have you got any athletes that have used it, or anybody that swears by it, or any good? It's any benefits yourself from it that.
I've got a couple of athletes that are sponsored
okay.
by the companies,
yep.
So they get given them.
Yep.
They use them mainly for recovery, because I've had these thoughts about them anyway, but they use them mainly on flights.
Okay.
And they report that when using it on the flight, they get on, especially on the long haul, they're not getting the swollen ankles, so it's improving the lymphatic drainage and that flushing effect, which I think we're
in agreement.
Yeah, we're
in agreement on anyway.
It does what it says it does.
And that has been my exposure to the Compex. That was primarily the what it started out was and what everyone was promoting it for. It was purely that recovery basis. But now it's starting to drip feed into this.
Into muscle strength.
Into this muscle strengthening and muscle recruitment, which is why we're having this.
Well, I mean, on that note there, you're putting an external electrical stimulus where, I think, Jeremy, you mentioned it earlier before we began, that it can't choose how many muscle fibres it's activating. It can't choose the direction at which is no... I mean, that's I mean, and the understanding that, I mean, the thing is muscles, first they lengthen and then they feel tension, and that tension is then rebounded out with a contraction, the stretch shortening cycle, for example. So it needs to be lengthened, it needs to have that load to explode before anything else. And here you're just putting something on that's asking it to contract. Now, I haven't used them enough, but I'm guessing, Flex, if you're using them on enough muscle groups in enough areas... I mean, what are you trying to do? You're trying to have, can you be detailed enough and we'll have glute medius on and glute minimus off? Can we have medialis on or vastus lateralis off? Or what makes, who's making these informed decisions for athletes out there, putting them on at different times? And one, are we creating muscle imbalances? Two, are we, well, we talked about, we're creating the neurological conflict. And thirdly, and potentially most importantly, are we stiffening people up? Are we making them, are we giving them sort of stiff muscles on one side, or are we teaching them to be shortened in a shortened position and then try to train through that? I think it's really important questions, and I think it's things that need to be researched before the things that I would need answering before I give them to one of my athletes.
I think going into what you've said there, Phil, we've talked about the lengthening and shortening cycle, but at the same time then that whole process of most of the time they're putting them on one muscle group. So then it's a case of, well, that muscle is being told to come on at all the time when it potentially should be off. But then also then the sequencing of that relative to everything else, like, because that is a huge neurological conversation between glute min, glute med, glute max, hamstrings, quads. As I'm squatting, there is no agonist, antagonist, this is shortening, this is lengthening. They're all doing something and contributing to that motion. It's not a case of, oh, this is shortening, this is completely relaxed. I'm stood up, there's neurological stimulus and drive going through those muscles, and this is, how is that affecting that conversation?
I mean, if we take if we look at the running gait analysis where we're actually measuring electrical output from musculature, we see a flow, we see a wave. We don't see a constant
on
muscle. What we see is we see some come on, and there's timing, and as you mentioned, sequencing. There's times and there's sequences, muscles come on, they come off, and you see that. That's clear to see in a gait phase when you've got muscles are all off during swing phase, for example, and then some come on, then others come on at different times. Putting a stimulus on one muscle or not on that muscle, and trying to replicate that those intricacies that you're talking about, for me, it's bordering along the line of dangerous.
Yeah, I think putting that into the squatting analogy in exercise, actually, in fairness, like studies that everyone in squatting is obsessed with glute recruitment and everything like that. So then they have the studies of, well, the glute bridge has the highest amount of EMG activity in the glutes. So doing that compared to the squat where you only get 40% of the activity that you get from the glute bridge, but that's, again...
40%
of
100 is more than 100% of 5.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But the other thing that we have, I mean, they talk about, you've talked about it as well, about putting it on through a squat, putting it on through like cycling, etc. But when we're talking about things like, a lot of the research that goes back again talks about recovery, and it's all in static positions. Again, it's not going through range of movement. No. How are you gaining anything if you're only working in a small range of movement? It's exactly like you said with your mathematical genius there. 40% of 100 is more than... No. So,
yeah, it's the problem with the fitness industry, right, is everyone's trying to invent something because we can sell it.
Yeah.
Like, we can't sell, go sit down on a bike and do your recovery.
Yeah. Well, you can.
And you can. Good athletes will listen to the coaches and they'll go do what they need to do. Yeah. There's a lot of people, they want
the quick way out.
Yeah. Fix this for me. Yeah. How do I do this? Like.
But the other thing is, people just want to use their time as best as possible. So, for example, if they know they've only got 5-10 minutes to do something, is using a complex machine for 5 or 10 minutes when you have no other time to do anything else, you've only got that 5 minutes, is that better, or can we do better stuff? Can we be doing something better? I think we all know what we would answer that with, but I can understand the reason why people use it, especially people that, like you said, if you're on an aeroplane or if you're on, I don't know, you're on your way somewhere else, you're in the maybe more of a sticky situation, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the studies prove that it's better than doing nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you don't have time and you only tell me that you're not going to do your recovery, then, of course, the complex is then going to be better because you're not doing it, than doing nothing to do with your recovery.
But is it better even in the long term? I'm not sure. And there isn't any... there's no long-term research. No. I mean, the longest term that I've... obviously, I haven't scouted everything, but the longest term that I can see is people are looking at 6 weeks. That isn't long-term in the grand scheme of things.
No, for positives or negatives.
No, exactly, yeah. No, exactly. In athletes, there's a lot, as I said before, there's lots of research in people that are bed-bound, people that are critically ill. That's not what I'm saying, but I mean, with athletes, there's not massive amounts of research.
I mean, increasing stroke, that's something we've not said, in fairness, is... the increasing of strength for someone who's got atrophy.
Yeah.
That is bedbound. Like, this is a way of them being able to...
Yeah, and that's proven to be... Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which you know, ultimately is, I don't think we're discussing that you recruit more motor units. So when you recruit more motor units and you activate more motor units, you get stronger. I don't think there's any doubt there. The question is it the right way to activate those units? Is there carryover and is it potentially dangerous? Getting someone from bed to walking... isn't dangerous. No. Taking an elite athlete and confusing neurological signals, and I'm not saying they are, personally I think that could be dangerous, it might not be. That's the question we have to ask. Like, or for me, the product company needs to answer that question themselves. They need to go out there and need to do that research. Anything else, guys?
I guess what's the end message? Would you use it or would you recommend it? As our product review, is it something that you would spend your hard-earned money on?
I'm going to say no. Yep. I'm going to say no. I think because there's other ways to recover. And I can't see any I can't see any performance enhancing benefits to it, and on the same side of things, I actually worry that there's potential for causing more harm than good. So I'm going to say no. What are you saying?
How about you?
I am also saying no for the same reasons. Recovery can be done other ways, and that unknown of how are you affecting that all-important nervous system at doing what it's designed to do, which is controlling movement itself.
And I'm agreeing and saying no. Mainly for my side of things, the research-wise, there isn't anything to suggest that that is the way to go or that it affects anything in the long term. So it's a no from me.
Good. Happy New Year to everybody out there. And we'll be back next week. What have we got coming up next week, guys?
There's a whole host of things that we've got coming up. Potentially the conversation about knees over toes and squatting.
Knees over toes and squatting next week.
That's next week.
Next Tuesday.